Hey, welcome back everyone to another episode of the Product Uncensored Show, and I am your host, Colin Pell. Today we are back with episode 44, and what's really special is that for the first time we have a returning guest. So at least up until episode 43, every guest has been a new guest, but I decided to get this special guest back because today we are going to be talking about a very interesting topic that I'm personally very interested in, and I thought, who better than this guest, right? So let's talk a little bit about who I've got on the show today. I consider him to be one of the funny guys of product management. You have probably seen him in one video form or another, or you may even be using one of his products without even knowing it, right? When he first came onto the podcast a long time ago, it was in March 2022, he had just launched his product called Super Meme. And they had just launched, I think, a month in when he came onto the podcast. Now, 2 years later, Super Meme is still fully bootstrapped, generates $55,000 in ARR, and is now a legit growing micro SaaS platform. He's one third of the micro SaaS product founders. So please welcome to the show, Sanjeev NC. Welcome to the show, Sanjeev.
Hi, Colin. Thank you so much for having me back again. It makes me feel so good. So yours is one of my favorite podcasts because we just had a conversation. We just forgot that the recording was on. So I'm super glad to be back again. I'm looking forward to this.
Fantastic, fantastic. So as I was mentioning earlier, one of the main reasons I thought it would be good to have you back on the show is that I've been hearing and reading a lot more about micro SaaS. And I was thinking, now who better to get on the show than Mr. Super Meme himself, Sanjeev, right? So what I'm going to do now is, actually, before we go there, you know what, just for the sake of those who did not, you know, tune into the previous episode where the first time you were in, maybe you can give a brief introduction of who you are. I think that'll be fantastic.
Awesome. Cool. So this introduction has been quite hard for me in the recent times, right? Because I've been just doing so many things. So I'll still try. So my primary identity remains, I am one of the co-founders of SuperMeme.ai. It's an AI meme generator where you just enter text and it gives you memes. And it's useful for marketers, social media managers, and educators. Apart from that, I also freelance as a content creator. So I create videos for brands. I create memes for brands, and I also create blog content for brands. And actually, between last time and this time we spoke, I've also acted in a web series here locally. So I also, that's also one of the personas that I've taken over. But primarily, I'm focused on building Super Meme and also a bunch of other micro SaaS, because that is an area that I believe in and I want to fully go into.
Wow. So you even went into acting.
So, a little bit, yeah. Wow. For 3 months, just did like one small character in a web series.
Okay. So now this is a really interesting place to start. So tell us more about, you know, how this came to be, how it happened. You know, tell us more.
Awesome. So yeah, like end of 2021 is when I stopped going to a full time job and I entered this, like, you know, freelance and, like, you know, indie hacker lifestyle. So I was asked to help co-write or like help on a script, not co-write, I just contribute to a script, which is based in an office. So it was a Tamil script. It was for a Tamil TV series. And I just went in to help because they obviously saw my memes and videos. They know that I can make a joke about the office. And then there was one character that they like wanted someone to play. And like they said, okay, here's a thought. Why don't you play that? You've done videos. And like, you know, we believe in you. And they gave me that opportunity. So for 3 months, I spent my time in, like, you know, like shooting the video series, and I got to see behind the scenes of what exactly goes in when someone records a movie or a TV series. It is a lot more than I imagined. So it's definitely not easy at all. So my respect for that industry grew a lot after being part of that experience. And yeah, it taught me a lot. It made me appreciate, like, you know, putting out content even more.
Okay, fantastic. Again, to give more context to our listeners and viewers as well, right? I think one of the things that I wanted to cover with Sanjeev today, which will it's one of the topics I think I hope to cover, right, is so Sanjeev's journey into becoming the co-founder of SuperMeme wasn't just like sort of random, right? So he was a product marketing manager at Freshworks, and then he became a product manager at SuperOps. And then after that, he went into becoming a founder with SuperMeme AI. So that's why I really wanted to talk about MicroSaaS from the lens of someone who has done product. And that's why, you know, Sanjeev is here. To sort of tag on to what you said, Sanjeev, what was that moment, right? Because you were saying that you decided to go into this indie hacker lifestyle, that's when you went full on with SuperMeme. What was it that made you decide that, you know what, I'm just going to go all in with this?
So what I realized over like 10 years of my career is that I get angry very easily at work. So for various reasons, right? So it's not, I get very emotional at what I do. And when let's say things don't align with what I think, and I have crazy thoughts, I have like, you know, futuristic crazy thoughts. So in that combination doesn't go very well when you're like, you know, in an organization that wants to go in a certain direction, and then you are walking in and you have crazy thoughts and you expect everyone to believe it. And that relationship was going on for a while where I was not really happy, not in terms of the job. Job was great, but then I felt like I wanted a little bit more freedom and I wanted a little bit more emotional range in terms of like, I really wanted to invest a lot in my work. And it naturally came to the conclusion that the only time that I'll ever be happy doing what I do is when I work for myself. And it kind of led down that path. And it started as something, okay, I'm in between jobs and let me try to do something to sustain myself. And I had SuperMeme like bringing in some source of income, and I took up freelancing to get in another source. And it just sustained for 2 years now. So it's not a bad place to be.
Okay. So there wasn't like this, like, let me see how I can phrase this, right? Was it such that, you know, you tried out SuperMeme and then you saw that it was getting some revenue traction. Then you said, okay, I can do this full time. Or was it just, look, I think it's time to do SuperMeme. Like, yeah.
No, I think it gave me confidence, definitely. So the fact that I was able to make some money on the internet gave me confidence that I can sustain this lifestyle. But I don't, if not for SuperMeme, and by the time I was like, you know, when I started doing this full time, I already had a couple of people had freelanced for. So I know that freelancing is also an option for revenue generation. I knew that SuperMeme is also bringing in revenue. So I was confident in sustaining this life and growing this. If not for this, my instinct would have been to go look for another job. So I would have tried really hard to go look for another job. Right now, I'm at a state where I'm really avoiding trying to look for a job. It really makes me scared. I want to continue living this life where I am in control of what I do. I'm in control of my time. I'm in control of when, where, and how I spend my time, which is very important to me. But I just say that I've been fortunate enough that I've been able to lead this lifestyle, and I hope that like it continues.
Okay. I've got a few more questions. Obviously, I have a lot of questions. But let me just start by giving an introduction to MicroSaaS. And the reason why I think this will be important is not everyone knows what MicroSaaS is, and SuperMeme is a MicroSaaS. So a lot of my questions, even when I'm talking to Sanjeev, the founder, or when I'm talking about Sanjeev as part of the person who is running or growing SuperMeme, I think the thought process of having MicroSaaS is quite important. So just let me do a few bullet points that I just want to, you know, spitball a little bit. And then, of course, you know, Sanjeev, you being the guru here, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, right? Because so what is the definition of a MicroSaaS? So according to Ninetale, a MicroSaaS is a small-scale software as a service business that is operated by either an individual or a small team. And unlike the traditional SaaS businesses, MicroSaaS companies are characterized by their lean business model, and they are usually focused on a niche market, and they're offering a specialized service or product to their customers. So it's definitely a smaller version of SaaS, and we will go into questions around SaaS and micro SaaS, you know, what is the difference, la-di-da. But let's also talk about the potential of micro SaaS, because this is something that, you know, when I first started, you know, trying to dig a little bit deeper, it was quite interesting, right? Because micro SaaS as a market accounts for 20% of all SaaS companies that are out there. So this is according to Bessemer Venture Partners. According to OpenView, the micro SaaS industry will be worth about $100 billion in 2025. And according to Canonic, the number of micro SaaS companies grew by 35% in 2021 alone. In which case, you know, Super Meme would have been part of the growing the year after. But even then, 35% of micro SaaS companies, the companies grew by 35%. So it is a very interesting niche to be in. And that's why I thought it would be good to sort of give that introduction so that we sort of set the stage. And when I'm talking to Sanjeev, people sort of understand where I'm coming from. Anything to add, Sanjeev?
Actually, I have my own definition of micro SaaS, which I put out like a couple of weeks back. So I think it is again in line with what you mentioned, right? But then the way that I define micro SaaS is it's a SaaS product that solves a micro problem for a micro market with a micro team and a micro budget while being happy with micro growth. So the reason I define it like this is it breaks down the different aspects of micro SaaS. So it is really a microcosm of a SaaS company. But then, to me, micro SaaS is a mindset. That's why my newsletter is named Micro SaaS Mindset. Micro SaaS is more a philosophy and a mindset, and we'll talk about it when we talk about SaaS and micro SaaS. But more than the definition, see, if you want to define micro SaaS, you can shrink SaaS and just apply it. Right? That also still works. But I don't see micro SaaS as that. I see that as a movement, almost as a myth breaker of SaaS, where everything you used to believe in about a SaaS company is being broken by micro SaaS company. So that's how I see it.
Okay. Actually, you know what? Let's just jump straight into that. Your last sentence really was very intriguing because you were saying micro SaaS is busting a lot of the myths about SaaS. What are some of those myths that micro SaaS is really busting out there right now?
Okay. So the first myth is that you need a large team to build software. And that's what I used to believe in, right? Where, okay, if I think software building, I'm imagining like 10 people, one project manager, product manager, designer, a QA person. Maybe that's not true anymore, but then you still need a large team. And what micro SaaS is breaking is you have so many independent one-person SaaS companies who are doing really well. They're making, like, you know, thousands of dollars in revenue. And even Sam Altman in one of the interviews said that one-person billion-dollar company is going to be a possibility. And I strongly believe in that. So that is a myth that micro SaaS broke. The second myth is that you need a long period of time if you want to build software, even an MVP, right? Like 10 years ago, MVP, or even 5 years ago, an MVP would have taken a company 3 months of time, or 3 months is very conservative. Like it sometimes takes even longer, 3 months and some funding and an office and all that. But we launched our MVP in 2 weeks, and there are people who are launching their MVP on weekends. So MVP doesn't have to, software MVP is getting shipped very fast. And another myth it is breaking is you need to have, let's say, a proper sales cycle. You need to have a GTM motion where you need to have salespeople, support people. But then most of the micro SaaS products are being run by very small teams and even single person. So this whole notion around having dedicated customer facing teams and dedicated, like, you know, support teams, that notion is being broken. And also the spend around marketing, right? So SaaS companies are usually accepting the fact that I have to spend on ads, I have to spend on, like, you know, partnerships, sponsorships, and because they're operating at that scale. But micro SaaS is breaking that myth, saying anyone can just come in, spend, like, you know, $10 on a domain name and get started, and just integrate Stripe and they can start making money from day one. And again, micro SaaS is also defining a lifestyle for software builders. So, like, when you imagine a software like a startup founder 5 years ago, you'd probably see them working all the time. You'll probably see them, like, you know, pulling all-nighters, like, you know, pulling weekenders, and then they're just working on the startup constantly. But then with micro SaaS, you see people who hardly work, like, you know, 4 hours a day or 2 hours a day. I'm very proud of that. And that includes me as well, right? Like, there are times where we don't work on Superbeam actively, and it's a conscious choice. And because we're bootstrapped, there's no one questioning us. We know that for what people pay for, the software will run itself. And, like, you know, whenever we have to, that's when we work. So it's also changing that mindset that, like, SaaS software doesn't have to be so complex, doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to require a lot of resources. It can run while providing value to a group of people who are willing to pay money for it. So these are some of the myths that, you know, that I think Micro SaaS is breaking.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. Very, very enlightening. I was trying to process that while you were busting all those myths, right? It sounds like Micro SaaS is, in fact, you know, almost a lean and agile type mindset put into hyperdrive, right? Now, what do I mean by that? Because when you talk about how an MVP can be launched in 2 weeks, in 3 weeks, right, and no longer takes months or quarters or even years in some cases, right? I believe that embodies the heart of why MVPs came to be, right? You're building to learn. Yep. I know I'm stepping on slightly mushy ground here, because I know some people say that MVPs are fake, you know, MVPs are now, you know, it's not the in thing anymore. But I still do believe that the concept of MVP as a mindset of I'm building the smallest piece,
yep,
possible in order to learn still makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
That's one.
Yep.
Then secondly, when you're talking about how, you know, nowadays or previously, a lot of SaaS companies, you know, you need the customer-facing person, you need this product person, you need this marketing person, and all of that. And what Micro SaaS is doing is saying, no, you really don't. Is you can really function with a very, very lean team. And I think the final point that I really, really liked was how you were saying that, you know, for Micro SaaS founders, there is that option to not work, you know, not do that hustle porn or that work hustle 24/7, which used to be so glorified, you know, just maybe, you know, yep, 5-10 years ago. And I think that's something that resonates more and more with a lot of people. I think, you know, post-COVID, there was the great resignation, people realizing that I don't want to be in the office every single day. And now with how you're talking about Micro SaaS, it sounds even more interesting that, you know, people are able to do this. And the reason why Micro SaaS would be a perfect platform for this is because SaaS is all about recurring revenue, right? So by someone, yeah, signing up to what you do, you get that recurring revenue. And because you're not focused on making it big or exploding straight away, you don't have to keep chasing that next dollar. And so that's where I'm guessing, you know, Sanjeev, you were saying that allows you to make a conscious decision that, hey, today I'm just going to put in 2 hours and tomorrow I'm going to put in 4 hours. And you know what? Next week, yeah, I'm just going to go on holiday.
Yeah. And my business will still run. See, the thing is, let's say if Supermeme was VC funded, for example, then we would be chasing growth. So what would have ended up happening is that maybe Supermeme would have evolved into a social media platform where, okay, you can now schedule memes, you can now, like, you know, connect to all those things. Because at all points, we are forced to expand our market because, like, you know, we are chasing growth. But because it's just the three of us, we are laser focused on, okay, Supermeme will always be an AI meme generator. And if, let's say, people want to extend that ability, we will give out APIs. So it's not that, like, you know, we don't believe in social media tools, like, you know, using memes, but we will not be the ones building it. Like, we don't want to, like, you know, hire a big team, manage it and build it. We will focus on the core problem. So the freedom and flexibility this gives lets us choose what we want to work on and lets us choose what we don't want to work on also, which is equally important.
Okay. So in that sense, right? So here's, I guess, one of the questions that I wanted to ask when it comes to Micro SaaS. Wait, let me see what I can find the article. One of the articles I was reading was saying that by definition, Micro SaaS tends to have some sort of bracket in terms of their ARR. And actually, when I compared what Supermeme is doing versus that definition, technically, you guys are no longer considered Micro SaaS by the strict definition of the word. So I guess the question for you as one of the founders is, for Supermeme, is the goal to just make sure that, you know, you guys earn enough to pay yourselves and to run the business, or is it to grow to a certain extent? Like, what are the goals that Supermeme has as part of the founding team?
Okay. So I would think of it in layers, right? Say the absolute essential, like the topmost layer is, why do we even work? Like, you know, that is it's at a philosophical level, right? So for me, running Supermeme is my ticket to freedom. So running Supermeme is a way where I don't have to exchange my time for money anymore. Supermeme is an asset that is going to bring me that money. And this is in alignment with, I think I can speak for the other co-founders as well, where like Ramshri, one of the co-founders, is also leading a similar life where he has one more microsas that he's running. And like that's pretty much all he does. He has two microsas products and he, like, you know, he spends his time on the things that he wants to spend. So that is at the topmost level, where the goal is we get to a point where we don't have to exchange our time for money, and like we choose what we want to do with the time. And that's something that I'm chasing. And that's one more reason I'm trying to build multiple microsas products, kind of diversify, like, you know, our potential income sources. At the second layer, what we want to do at a product level, we want to become the default meme generator of the internet. And by that, what I mean is, we feel like creating memes is really hard, and we want to enable more non-meme creators to generate memes. Like, let's say you want to create memes to promote your podcast. And let's say someone in the marketing team of a company wants to create memes to promote their product. And all these people are not traditional meme creators, and we want to enable more people like that, eventually becoming the default meme generator of the internet. Like what, let's say what Canva did to designing. Like it made it super simplified. It made it super easy to bring non-designers into, like, you know, designing. We want to do that for memes. So that's the goal. That's what we are moving towards. And that's the goal of the product. But like I said, the reason that I am motivated and I'm passionate about this is very selfish, that I want to stop exchanging my time for money. And my best bet right now is grow Supermeme into a point where it takes care of it for me.
Got it. Okay. So again, just to sort of lean on something that you mentioned just now, because you were saying that aside from your personal ambitions of not wanting to exchange your time for money, right? That you are in control for Supermeme. You also mentioned that Supermeme wants to be the default meme generator of the internet. But we all know that in really order to do that, in order to conquer the internet, you need to spend a lot in terms of, you know, your PR, in terms of awareness, in terms of your marketing, ads, and things like that. So as a micro SaaS, how is Supermeme trying to think about that? Because, you know, when I'm thinking about it, at some point, it kind of contradicts. It's almost like a paradox, right? Because you want to be the best platform, but at the same time, you don't want to do it in a way that you're going to have to like invest crazy amounts of money. You don't want to chase growth. How do you guys think about, how do you think about that?
Okay. So what is the default meme generator of the internet right now?
The Jiffy or something like that. One of those things.
Jiffy, yeah. Image Flips, all the platforms that you know.
Yes.
Like, have you seen Image Flips website? Have you seen, like, you know, the PR that they've done? It's not a lot because memes, I think the problem that we've picked has enough demand that it has that virality built into it. That's why I'm so confident that we will be able to do it, because it's the nature of the product. Like, for example, let's say if I started like a social media marketing tool, and then I'm saying that, okay, I want to become the default social media marketing tool, I probably might be hard. But I still strongly believe that the mindset that we have, okay, for you to be, like, you know, really top of something, that you have to spend X amount of money and X amount of hours. I still think I want to challenge that. So I want to challenge that to say, okay, a three-member team working remotely without a lot of investment can end up becoming top tool in a category. And let's say, even if I don't end up being there, my journey towards there will get me to a point which is, like, you know, which is something that no one has ever gone before. But I think with Supermeme, we strongly believe that just by leveraging search volumes, like, for example, right now, you go and search for AI meme, Supermeme is one of the top results. I think it is the top results. So what we can do is, with that, let's say we are able to replicate that for memes itself. We're able to replicate that for, like, you know, every meme template out there. So like a very tactical way in which we would do this is invest in SEO. where we do like, you know, some sort of programmatic SEO to make sure that we are on top of every search results. And because Superbeam website has the authority already, that is not an impossible task. So there are ways in which you can still do that without significant investments. And see, right now Superbeam will have about, I don't know, some thousands of backlinks, and we paid for none of it, right? Like, we were featured in like a lot of these articles, we were featured in a lot of YouTube videos without spending anything, because we built a product that people want to talk about. I think if you build a product that people want to talk about, everything else will follow, but it's not easy. I think that the problem space that we're in, we got lucky, and that's one more reason why I want to build multiple microservice products, right? I want to see if I can replicate that. I want to see if I can build and scale like other products just the way that we did with Superbeam, just for me to know that, okay, I want this to be a repeatable skill, but I definitely feel it's possible.
Beautiful, beautiful. I really like it, by the way. Again, you know, a lot of what you're saying, right, while I'm trying to process it, feels like it is a very pure a way of doing things before, you know, funding became the de facto way of growth and VC funding. Now, again, just to be clear, I'm not knocking on everyone else who's taking VC funding, but I love what, you know, people like Sanjeev and Supermeme are doing, which is showing them that, hey, there is a different way to grow. And I like the fact that it's not to say that Supermeme doesn't have ambitions of making it, right? It's just a different kind of making it. They're saying that, no, we believe that we can get to the top, not because we spend the most money or because we chase the growth, but it's because we're creating a product that people want to talk about, people are happy to talk about, and it kind of solves that problem. It really reminds me of, Simon Sinek's Start With Why, right? The why of your existence. And I feel it seems like, you know, you have really gotten it down as to why Supermeme exists, and that permeates into your how, and your what. I'm trying to process all of this. This is a lot to put in. So then my next question to you is, you know, because of how you want to do it, how does Supermeme do its planning? Like, you know, in every product, not every startup that has a product function, right? One of the biggest issues is always prioritization, road mapping. What do you build next? You know, who's the persona? How does that work at Supermeme? Is it different? Is it the same?
Okay. So the primary focus for Supermeme right now is marketers, right? The reason that we target that segment is because we believe that is underserved. Like, marketers using meme. So what do we mean by that? So that kind of drives our prioritization. For example, the latest feature that we worked on is we were improving our core meme generation algorithm. So marketers are looking for memes that they can just take and use. They don't have that time or the kind of, you know, priority to go in and play around with meme generation. So we want to give them the best possible memes at the first shot. So that's what we were working on. So some of the things that we want to work on, for example, we want to work on direct social sharing. So where one click, you just share it directly to social. We want to work on things like you enter your website and then we'll give you memes based on that. So we're trying to reduce the time to value for marketers and by doing that, I'm sure that we will still reduce the time to value for other personas as well. Let's say like founders or educators who want to use memes. So that is our focus, where we want to make it easy for them. And by focusing on that, we'll slowly start solving for the others as well. And one area that we are sure that we don't want to focus on are consumer meme creators, not because we don't think there's a market there, but because we feel like this is a better path for us, where we're able to, because we're bootstrapped, we have to focus on generating revenue. And marketers, we feel, is a way to generate revenue. And once we get to that point and we have enough revenue that can be reinvested back into the product, is when we can start focusing on like a larger segment who are not like, who don't have the budget, let's say, invest in a meme creator, whereas like a marketer or a social media manager are already spending on marketing tools. So it's much easier to get them to pay for Supermeme than like consumer segment.
Yep. Okay. I want to dig a little bit more about this. So like you were saying that one of the things that Supermeme was trying to work on was the meme generation algorithm, right? How do you decide to work on that as opposed to another five things? Because they're like, you know, even in trying to serve that marketer's persona, and whether you are micro SaaS or SaaS or e-commerce, right? Prioritization is always going to be there. You're always going to have more ideas than you have people to implement or make those build those features. So is the method or the tools that you use for Supermin, is it the same as what you were doing when you were at SuperOps, for example, or you know, Freshworks, or is it different?
It's the mindset is the same. In terms of prioritization, it's okay. In terms of deciding what you want to build, and it doesn't just apply to SaaS or micro SaaS, right? You have limited resources and time, and you're trying to get the maximum leverage or the ROI from it. So that's the principle that I personally apply to prioritization, not just with micro SaaS, even with like, you know, things that I, how I spend my time. So in applying that lens, what is going to get us the most leverage is that if someone signs up for Supermin, they see that the memes that they are generating is of high quality, it's going to help them convince that, okay, this is a product that I want to pay for. So that's the framework that we use, where, okay, earlier when people were generating memes in Supermin, the feedback that we were getting was, okay, some of these memes are great, but then it doesn't exactly capture what I have in mind. So that was a feedback that kept coming in. So now we know that, okay, if we can increase that, that is going to have a direct impact on revenue. And that is obviously like, you know, what we are going after in terms of getting more revenue so that we can keep this going sustainably and like, you know, tying into the larger goal of, okay, I don't have to exchange my time for money. So that is a decision-making factor where what can I build today that is going to give me maximum leverage? So that's one of the primary focus areas. Obviously, there are going to be smaller things that you build here or there, which may or may not be backed by like sound decision-making frameworks, but you just feel like you have to do it, so you do it. But the bigger investments in terms of you decide to build something that's going to take like, you know, 1 month or 2 months to build, that I think has to have some thought. And most of the time the thought is how can it contribute into our long-term revenue and how can it serve or add value to our target segment?
Okay. Fantastic. So again, for those who are listening, you know, you might think that, oh, this is a conversation just about micro SaaS and Supermin, but I think what you would realize if you listen as well, and what I'm taking away a lot, is that there are a lot of very sound product principles that are at play here, because it's not just about building what people want, it's building what your target persona wants that is going to help you with your long-term revenue generation, right? So if we always talk about, you know, don't feature snack, for example, I think micro SaaS is the perfect example of how this happens in a much more micro environment, which then brings me to the next question. There are three of you in Supermin. How do you all make decisions? Is it by consensus? Is it by, you know, I am Sanjeev, X product guy, so I decide. How does it work?
No, I think before that, I just want to add one point to our previous conversation. So being bootstrapped, I think, forces us even more to prioritize and to decide what we want to build, right? Because we don't have a lot of resources that we can throw around. So I think being bootstrapped really makes you, like, you know, really builds constraints around you so that you're forced to make the right decision most of the time. So I think that is also contributing, where it's just three of us and we can only build one thing. Like, we cannot build multiple things. We don't have multiple teams. So that, I think, has contributed into like our decision-making framework. I'm sorry.
Oh, bless you. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to your...
No, no, I was just going to say then I wanted to sort of get your answer to the question that I asked.
Yeah, I'm not trying to dodge that. So that's an important question. So what happens is that, okay, we're a very disconnected but connected team. So when I say disconnected, so we're not constantly talking to each other all the time. And that's also one more myth that, like, you know, so micro SaaS could break, is that you don't really have to be, like, you know, extremely close friends with your co-founders. You don't have to hang out with them all the time. You can still have a working relationship with them and continue to build a very strong product. And we're an example for that. So we have a WhatsApp group where we operate, and that's where we operate till date. So most of our conversation happens in the WhatsApp group. We get on calls like, you know, once in a month or like, you know, twice in a month based on if we have anything important to discuss. So what happens is that we have clear areas that we're working on. So I take care of anything that is marketing, anything that is outside facing, customer facing, like, you know, sales or support, anything on those sides. And Nico is our full stack developer. He takes care of everything on the app. And Ramsri is our AI developer. So he builds all the, like, you know, the models and all the behind the scenes work. And now he's also starting to build, like, you know, full stack apps. So they are both basically the engineering minds of the company. So in our own areas, we have full autonomy. We can do what we want. So and in marketing, I basically anything on the website is completely mine. I can go and decide to publish any blog I want. So that's completely there. And similarly on the engineering side. So product is an area where all three of us, like, you know, have to conceptually agree on something. And but it's usually like, you know, we bring in ideas from everywhere. And I try to apply a B2B or a marketing or a product marketing or product management, basically everything that I've done mindset to that to say, okay, is this going to help us, like, you know, move the needle on something? And that's also where some of the wacky ideas come, right? For example, text to meme, the idea that you can enter a text and it can be turned into a meme is not something that anyone's ever going to tell you. There is no market demand for it. No one's asking you. But then you need a product mindset to see that there are people who cannot create memes and they want to create memes. And the easiest way to get them to do that is just simply ask them to enter their thoughts and create memes for them. So to get to that, you have to have that product approach and product mindset. And you also need to have the engineering kind of conviction and possibility to see that, okay, you know what, let's make it happen. So when we were discussing in that group, so that was an idea where I said, okay, wouldn't it be awesome if we can enter a text and then, like, you know, that can become a meme? And that resonated with Ramsri and Nico, and all of them instantly got excited that, okay, you know what, this is something that we have to work on. So usually product decisions are consensus where all three of us get excited about at least the big things. The smaller ones that, you know, like, for example, Ramsri one day decided that he woke up and he decided to build multilingual memes. There was no demand for it. Like, you know, it is not something that we wanted to build, but he was excited by the idea. He just, like, you know, built it over a weekend. So those things will still continue to happen. And but beyond that, it is a decision where anything product, we usually try to agree on it. And most of the time, because we kind of operate in a similar mindset, there is usually consensus.
Okay. Fantastic. Maybe I think now will be a good time to talk a little bit about Super Meme and its other co-founders, because I believe that the three of you are not co-located. So the questions that I want to ask after this is how you communicate. Because you said you only go on to meetings like once a month or once in a month plus or 2 months, which, you know, as a person who's been in product for very long, that's like a pipe dream, right? You know, we have multiple meetings in a day, you know, from the day start until the day end. So that sounds crazy. But just to sort of make sure that I put it out there what the context of this question is going to be, I thought it would be good maybe you can share about who your co-founders are, where they are located as well.
Okay. So one thing before that is the three co-founders have never met. Like, we've never met each other at all. So Ramsri is in Hyderabad. So I'm based out of Chennai. I'm in Chennai, India. And Ramsri is in Hyderabad, India. So he's probably like an hour away for me in flight. And Nico is based out of Netherlands in Europe. So we met on the internet. We met on Ramsri and I connected on LinkedIn. And then Ramsri knew Nico from Twitter. So that's how we kind of got together. So we don't get on Zoom calls, but doesn't mean that we don't communicate. Right? We are still on chats and we communicate asynchronously. And that's got a lot to do with our personal preference of communication as well. All three of us prefer async communication, so it works for us. But like, for example, let's say if one of us doesn't prefer that, let's say if I want to get on calls, but then Ramsri prefers async communication, I can see that leading to problems. But it so happens that all three of us prefer async communication, so it works. And we also communicate clearly. We also communicate effectively. So we're able to get things done in this approach. But it may not work if, let's say, one of you defaults to calling, but then the other defaults to texting. So that may not work for you.
Okay. The question that I wanted to lead into, you already answered the first part. So I guess this would be the second part. Because you say that technically you're only getting on Zoom calls probably once a month, which means that, like you say, it doesn't mean that communication stops. And you're saying that WhatsApp seems to be the communication tool of choice. So question here is, for a microservice like SuperMeme, how important are things like documentation? Like, you know, how important is it to have a Notion or a Jira or an Asana where you write tickets and you put in your acceptance criteria, or, you know, make sure that if you're having a go-to-market strategy that you're writing it down as to, okay, we are going to launch here and this is what we're going to do. I'm going to publish this blog and then I'm going to post it on LinkedIn, da-di-da, et cetera, et cetera. So like, how does that work for SuperMeme?
So sometimes it's actually faster to do the work than, like, you know, documenting that you're going to do the work. For example, in my case, like, I could have like a Jira board where I'm listing down all my, like, you know, blog posts that I'm going to publish. But instead, what I do is I just go on like TypeDream, our website, like our website is hosted on TypeDream, and then I just publish the blog directly there. I wouldn't say that it is recommended. Obviously, like, I'm also a big fan of documentation, but then sometimes it's just faster to get it done. So the best part here is that no one's asking you to do it. One area where I personally extensively document is in terms of the like things that we want to work on. So I have an extensive backlog on Linear. So it's a tool that I use. It's not a tool that as a team that we use. It's that I find that tool easy to use. So I use that. So I know that at any point, if let's say we're expanding our team tomorrow, I know that there's already a bunch of things that we are already ready to work on. So, and also I tend to forget a lot. So it's better to document because for that purpose. But I don't think you need to do that if, let's say, to run, it's not essential to run microservices. Let's say if you're a single person building microservices, I don't see any reason why you have to document. If, let's say, you are the only person who's going to be doing it, you can just build, ship, and scale like just the way that we want. So it's not essential from a microservices perspective, but it's essential because it has other benefits. Like, you know, you won't miss out on ideas. It's easy to communicate when you expand your team and stuff like that. But you can still do it without that.
Okay. Fantastic. Okay. So I wanted to sort of now change tracks a little bit, still on the same topic. But regarding one article that you wrote, right? I think you wrote quite recently, why no code MVP isn't ideal for your microservices. And I believe that when you first started, SuperMeme was built on a no-code platform. Is that right? Yeah. So, can you talk a little bit more about why did you think that way back then and why you don't think that is the case now? So just for those who are listening, I'm going to repeat the question so it's clear before Sanjeev answers. The question around why no-code MVPs or no-code platforms may not be ideal for your microservices.
Okay. So, I have to give you a little bit of history in terms of why I feel that way, right? So I have been trying to learn how to code for about 5 years now, on and off. My background is IT engineering. That's what I studied, but then I learned, like, you know, I didn't learn to code in college. So the reason I said that, and see, the way that SuperMeme started as a no-code tool, that tool that I built, like, on a no-code platform, is pretty much useless. Apart from the fact that it proved a concept. So that there it is useful. And it is a very simple tool. So the reason I say that you're probably better off learning how to code than no code is that no code tools beyond a certain scale also have a steep learning curve. And I feel if you're trying to build software, see, at one point, the complexity of no code tool is increasing. On the other side, the complexity of learning how to code is reducing. So I feel you're better off putting your effort here where you might as well learn how to code so that your product can scale and you have a lot more customizability over your product than, let's say, getting stuck on a no-code platform and then trying to work your way around, like, you know, that. And plus, no-code platforms are expensive. Like, you still have to pay money for it if you want to get it to do, like, you know, pretty much what you want. So the prime reason why I say no-code MVP is better, code MVP is better than no-code MVP is that if you're trying to learn how to build that, you try your hand at building code. See, it's not suitable for everyone. If you are, let's say, going for a no-code MVP, it is great to a point. After that, you are better off finding, let's say, a tech co-founder to help you with that because it will push you to a form of constraint. But again, I know that there are contradictory examples to this. I think I am saying this because I tried learning no-code tools and it didn't work for me. So I really want to learn how to code, and I think it might be harder, but I feel like I might get results with actually learning how to code.
Okay. So it sounds like what you're saying is kind of mirroring the journey that Supermu has, right? You start off by building with no code, you validate a concept or you validate a demand, yep. and you go, yep, this works. And then after that, it's probably better to then just move to either getting a tech co-founder, someone who can write code, or you learn code yourself.
Okay.
Because I've always wondered, you know, how that would work. So from a personal perspective, I'm also an IT graduate, but I can tell you for a fact that I suck at coding. I hated coding. I've tried all sorts of languages. And believe you me, I have tried it. To me, it does not make sense. Like this, I can do like basic stuff, or where at least I could, but you know, it was just too difficult. So I'm wondering, like, you know, so for people like me, where code just doesn't make sense, what hope is there for us if you're saying no code platforms, you know, don't work? So
see, it's not that it doesn't work, Greg. I'll tell you another reason why I prefer coding platforms. I have a lot of ideas that may or may not work. I have a lot of ideas that are crazy to pursue. I find joy in pursuing those ideas. So that's one more reason I want to learn how to code, right? So what no code platforms does is it restricts you on that path. Like, you know, you have to operate within. So it works really well if your idea is like, you know, it's some sort of a database, some sort of predefined path. Within concern it works, but if you want to really like truly explore solutions, I feel like coding is kind of like it is going to take it on the, again, it's very personal, but what I believe is the cost of a no code platform and the constraints it brings to manage that, I feel it's better if you spend your time in learning how to code, which is again getting, like I said, right, I spend $10 a month on GitHub Copilot. And it is getting really, really easy to build software. So that's what I'm betting on. I'm betting on the fact that it is going to become a lot more easier for people to build software. So your no-code tools obviously will exist. But then if you are serious about building a micro SaaS product, or let's say even a SaaS product, I think you're better off trying to learn how to code. And if you feel like it's really not for me, maybe then, like, you know, use no-code as a way to validate your idea.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you so much. Okay. So another aspect of micro SaaS that I wanted to cover with you, specific to Super Meme as well, is how did you come up with the pricing, right? Because so one of the things that is another, I feel, which is another paradox between trying to build something and also trying to make sure that you can live off whatever you've built, is pricing, right? Because that's the most important thing. And the question will always be, do I price it low so I can play the volume game, or do I price it high to play the margins game? So in the real life example of Super Meme, how did you guys come up with, you know, the pricing? Was there anything, you know, did you use some sort of calculator? Was there a tool? Was there a framework? Or was it all just, you know, I think it will work this way?
I think it will work this way sounds accurate. So that's the person that we went. Because, again, there are so many things that you can, that can slow you down, right? And pricing is the biggest kind of culprit there, where you could spend days and weeks discussing and researching on getting to the right number. But I think it's faster if you just, like, you know, arbitrarily pick a number and go with it. And see, obviously, it has to be sensible. Like, you can't pick, like, you know, $300 for a micro SaaS product that does like one thing well. So I'll tell you the evolution of Super Meme's pricing. So we started at $20. Our first version of the product was $20, and someone did pay for it. And then we increased that to $35, and that was the pricing for a long time. And then what we realized was a lot of people want to try Super Meme and they are not able to afford it. So then we introduced a lower $10 plan, which is targeted towards people who want to just, like, you know, simply use it. And we reduce the number of memes that you can generate with the $10 plan. So let's say as an individual who's trying to build your own social media platform, you can use the $10 plan to generate memes and you can post it. And when we introduced APIs, we introduced a $99 plan, because if you're serious about using Super Meme in your own application, you're willing to pay that money, right? So your pricing will depend on your target audience and how much are they willing to pay. Like, an individual using Super Meme can pay $10 a month. So that's a reasonable price for them. a marketing team using SuperMeme can pay $35 a month because they have marketing budgets coming from a company. And a person or a company using SuperMeme's API to build their own application, which they can potentially monetize, can pay $100 a month because their value that they're getting from that is higher. So if, let's say, you're a Microsoft founder and you're struggling to kind of understand how to price, just anchor it to a persona and then, like, you know, see, okay, does this number make sense? And that's also one more reason why we have a purchasing power parity pricing. So which means that if you are, let's say, signing up from India, you get a 60% discount. And I think there is a number of, like, we use a tool which automatically applies a discount based on where you sign up, because in that segment, that's the number that makes sense to them. So like a $10 pricing might be okay in the US, but then it is expensive in India, which means we have to have a different pricing for India. So it is really anchored to the people who are paying and how much are they willing to pay. So that's one way to think about it. And I am in the middle of writing down a blog post on pricing itself, where, okay, how do you even think about, like, there are different models of pricing coming up. So you can get really, there is usage pricing, there is lifetime pricing, there is credits, like a bunch of stuff. But I would say if you're starting out, pricing shouldn't slow you down. Like, that should be a 5-minute, 10-minute decision where you're simply putting on a number, integrating it with Stripe and just posting it out there. Once you put out your product, you will get feedback on the price where you can then iterate. So don't spend time thinking about pricing in isolation when you can put something out, get feedback, and then decide.
Okay. In the case of SuperMeme, did you guys do like a competitive landscape evaluation, or was it more just of, you know, based off, you know, you just put an arbitrary price where you can put it out there, see whether people, you know, gauge the interest rates, and then you sort of move accordingly?
Yeah, arbitrary. So what we did, and it's a good rule to apply. So the price that you put out there, you will never be sure. But then, like, the thing is, you should try to always get to a point where you're not fully comfortable with that price. Like, for example, one rule that I follow personally, even my freelance projects, is that I will think of a number that makes me feel comfortable and then add like 1.x, 1.5x to it. Because the number that you're quoting should make you feel uncomfortable, because you tend to value yourself lower. So I think the number that we have on SuperMeme website is fair in terms of, let's say, we don't have a direct competitor, so we don't compare it like that. But if you compare it with, let's say, social media marketing tools, which cost at, like, you know, $50 a month, it can go up to that. But the marketing team's budget can afford SuperMeme. So that's what is determined by, that's what determined that number. So it's not a research, but then it is not, at the same time, completely out of the air as well. So there is some science behind it, but then it is not, like, we didn't spend hours trying to come up with the right number. We went with our gut. Like, I come from a SaaS background, so I understand SaaS pricing. Ramsey already has, like, you know, Ramsey and Nico both have their own products that they're selling, so they have a sense. So it was easy for us to agree that, okay, this is the right number to put out.
Okay. So I think that's a very important point to make, especially for those listening, right? So when Sanjeev says that, you know, hey, you know, pricing is not something that you should labor over, in the case of SuperMeme, they didn't start from a zero, from pure zero, right? Each of the co-founders already had some sense of the scene, some idea on the industry. And then I like how Sanjeev said, right? You put a number, then try multiplying it by 1.5 just to put yourself as uncomfortable. And then, you know, the story of how it started with $10 and then how it goes. I think that's a good point, right? Again, you know, just trying to process how MicroSaaS works. Again, I feel that a lot of this build, measure, learn triangle or pyramid really, really comes to the fore. You know, don't think about it so much that it cripples you. You don't get into this analysis paralysis. You know, you put it out there and then you can always tweak and go as you go along, which I think is fantastic. We covered this a little earlier, but I wanted to see whether there was anything else, which was around what tools do you use at SuperMeme. So I think you had mentioned that, you know, primary communication tool is WhatsApp, your documentation yep. tool is Notion. Is there any other tools that you use in SuperMeme that that you can share?
Actually, we don't use Notion, so we don't have a documentation tool. I use Linear to document the backlog. And that, again, this is just me. So as a tool, what all of us use is we use Retool for our internal dashboard. So our internal dashboard is built on Retool. And we use ChartMogul to track our revenue, which is connected with Stripe. And it tells us, okay, like this is our MRR and, like, you know, this is where we're going. Apart from that, I don't see us using a lot of tools. Actually, yeah, we don't use that many tools. Like, we don't have an email marketing tool like that I should probably implement. We don't have a CRM I should probably implement that. So we try to keep things light. And see, there's also one more problem, right? It is hard to find, like, you know, indie hacker friendly tools. Like, for example, email marketing gets charged per email, per contact. And we have 700,000 emails in our database. Like, I have no idea how to find an email marketing tool that we can afford. So there are problems like that we're trying to figure out, and we are all on a budget. So it's very hard for us to determine, like, you know, what tool we can spend money on. So right now, the only tool that we spend money on is probably on the engineering side. So there's nothing that I spend money on to say, okay, like, you know, we have to use it. Everything else is on just, like, you know, is as we go.
Okay. Okay. And then how do you decide on, or rather, is there a conversation around, like, okay, you know, if you're making this much revenue, how much goes into paying the three founders? How much goes back into marketing? How much goes back into engineering? How do you make that split?
So right now, the cost that, like, is already incurred is obviously, like, you know, taken out of the company account. So, like, your OpenAI costs and your engineering server bills and stuff like that. There is no specific budget into different areas. Like, for example, I might, like, there was a time where I was paying for Crisp, the chat application, where I said that, like, you know, I want to pay for this because, like, we have a lot of traffic I want to monetize. And, like, okay, yeah, sure, go ahead. Like, you know, we are paying $25. And I was paying for an SEO tool, like, for a while. So it is very, like, case by case basis where, like, you know, I say that I want to pay for this tool, and then, like, we just, like, you know, we just agree. If it's a smaller amount, then, like, you know, we don't, like, there's not much discussion around it. But generally, we try to apply a principle that, okay, most of the cost will go into engineering in terms of our infra. And we'll try to do everything else, like, you know, by ourselves and without spending a lot of money. Not to say that we don't want to spend money, but you'll be surprised at how much is possible without spending money. When you don't have the option to spend money, you can still do a lot of things. So there is still that option. And whatever is left and whatever profit that we have, like, we just keep a small buffer in case something comes up, and we split everything else equally between the three founders.
Okay. Okay. So the interesting thing then, because you mentioned this earlier, right? One of the things that you were saying that, you know, that Supermeme has proven with its founders is that you don't need to be best friends with the people that you've created this company with, as long as you have a good working relationship. But having just talked about finances and how you spend money on things, the element of trust needs to be very high, right? Because you know, either Nico or Ramshree says, you know, this Sanjeev guy is spending so much money on this platform, I don't know what he's doing, obviously it's not going to work. So there has to be that trust. How do you build trust in Supermeme where three of you have never met, and you know, the three of you are in different time zones?
So we definitely got lucky in terms of the people that came together. So all three of us are from a similar background. Like, you know, we have the same level of experience. We have experience in building something on our own. And then we have, like, you know, some sort of experience in building and putting things out there. So we understand. I think that alignment really helped. And also because of that, the trust is mutual, and trust was mutual from day one. Like, I know that these two guys have built something on their own, that I really respected that and looked up to that, right? Like, for example, when I got on a call with Ramshree, I was like, he is living a life that I want to live. So there is already that trust there. And, like, you know, when I saw that, and Nico is building a SaaS boilerplate in 2021 when it was not even a thing. Like, now SaaS boilerplates are pretty, like, you know, it's exploding. But then Nico is building a SaaS boilerplate back then, right? It was Ship SaaS. So I saw that they are doing cool things, and the respect was already there, and that turned into trust. I think through the course, what happened was that we never questioned anyone's decision. If someone, especially when it comes to finances, that if someone feels like they want to spend this money here, we believe that, okay, it is at the right, like, you know, it is at the right decision. Like, they know what they're doing. So there is never a point where spend was questioned. And that shows both the maturity of the individual who doesn't decide that they have to spend on something. So there is that mutual trust that if, let's say, Sanjeev is spending on something or Ramshree is spending on something, it is essential. Otherwise, they wouldn't spend. So that is established because we had that habit from day one.
Okay.
So I would say that the trust gets built based on your actions, like, you know, when you do. And once the trust gets built, your actions, so it's almost like a two-way street.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fantastic. You know, Sanjeev, it's been really very eye-opening, even for me to really learn, you know, really dig deep into how Supermeme functions and understanding how the three of you sort of apply MicroSaaS principles to do your day-to-day and to build. We're almost at the end of the show. And once again, right, as usual, right, there's so many other things we want to cover, but there's not enough time. There are a few questions that I wanted to sort of pop to you, and let's put this as like a pop quiz where you got to answer this like first thing that comes to your mind, and let's see how many we get to cover in the next 5 minutes or so. So are you ready for this, Sanjeev?
Yes.
Okay. So first question is, MicroSaaS, is it here to stay or is it a fad and why?
Definitely here to stay. I almost see that as a new market being created in the bottom of the, like, you know, the long tail. So definitely here to stay.
Okay. All right. Second question. Some people say that MicroSaaS is pretty much a race to the bottom. Do you agree? And if not, why?
By race to the bottom, what do you mean? So I just want to clarify before I answer.
Yeah. So what I was reading about is, you know, they're saying that when MicroSaaS becomes more popular, by virtue of the teams being smaller and being more nimble, they're able to play the price game. So he's saying that, you know, and he's coming more from a detractor's point of view. So, you know, basically you're going to drive all the prices down and then sooner or later SaaS becomes a race to the bottom.
I believe that software prices will go down. So I think MicroSaaS is leading that game where I can afford to price software low because my operating costs are low. So that I believe. But I don't think that it will reduce the quality of software in any way. So I think it's a good thing that, like, for example, OpenAI is able to reduce their API calls bill, like, you know, as and when they evolve into newer models. And I think that's a good thing. It allows more people to leverage that tech to build for what they want. So I think that is definitely going to happen, but I don't see that as a bad thing.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. Next question. What are your top three tips for anyone wanting to start a MicroSaaS product or platform?
You start by building something and then putting it out there. Even if it is a design, even if it is like a prototype on a no-code tool, even if it is just a website that you want to build, don't just have that idea in your head and complain that you can't build. Just build something and put it out there. And second part is, don't be afraid to learn how to code. That might put off a lot of non-developers, but it is a lot easier to learn how to code and to learn how to build things on your own. So don't be afraid of learning, like, you know, learning how to code. And third thing is, just be ready to unlearn a lot. If you're coming from a software background, be ready to unlearn a lot of things that you already know, because that is essential if you want to build MicroSaaS. It is not what you've kind of seen and perceived SaaS. So that's why a lot of people who are new to MicroSaaS will have a lot more chance of being successful than someone who spent 10 years working in a software company, because there's a lot of unlearning to do.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Next question. And this is actually related to what you just mentioned, right? What lessons can product folks learn from MicroSaaS?
Move fast. Like, there is no reason to spend hours in meetings and, like, you know, days on Jira boards discussing and going back and forth comments. Move fast, ship something. The feedback will usually come from the market, from the users itself.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much, Sanjeev. I think I threw that as fast as I could, and I think you did super well. just wanted to thank you so much for, you know, again, agreeing to be on the show. And as usual, right, we chit chat and suddenly time flies. And suddenly I look at the timer. Oh my gosh, we're like past an hour already. So thank you so much again, Sanjeev. By the way, really, really interesting thing for those of you who are watching this. Those of you who listen, you may not notice this, but those of you who are watching, Sanjeev is actually having the same background, wearing the same shirt as he was during the first time he appeared on the show. Because I was like, you know, just before we started recording, he's like, Sanjeev, it looks like you've not changed at all. And he's like, yeah, because I even wore the same shirt. I was like, holy smokes, man. That is some considerable memory right there.
Hopefully there'll be a part three and then I'll still be wearing the same shirt and the same background.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah. So Sanjeev, before we sort of sign off from the show, is there any last words or any, you know, advice that you would like to leave with our viewers or our listeners?
I think microsas mindset is the word that I want to leave with, because it is possible for literally anyone to go and build software to solve problems. So if you have that inclination, because I used to strongly believe that because I don't know learn how to code, I can never build software and I can never start a company, or I need to know a lot. But right now it is a lot easier to build software, and it is going to get a lot lot more easy to build software. So if you have an idea, all you have to do is spend enough time on the internet trying to learn how to build, and you will get there. So don't let not knowing how to code and not knowing how to build stop you from building software.
All right. Thank you so much. So ladies and gentlemen, that was Sanjeev NC, the co-founder, chief meme officer of supermeme.ai. It's been a real pleasure to have him on the show. I'm going to say thank you very much and hope I'll see you again, Sanjeev. So to round off today's show, I think it's been great to really explore microsas. It's been one of the up and coming areas, which, you know, I don't know about the rest of you, but I've seen and heard a lot. It's becoming popular, and I was keen to explore it a little bit. And I think and I hope, you know, that having this conversation with Sanjeev has given the rest of you who are interested a little bit more of an insight about how you can build your product with microsas and some of the learnings that, you know, Sanjeev and his team have had from building SuperMeme. So thank you all so much for listening up until here. And hopefully I will see you at the next episode. Thank you so much and bye-bye.